Up next, we're talking money with the man responsible for fee-only financial planning in Ohio, founder of the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and expert advisor to the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. It's the only financial planning show on radio, Managing to be Wealthy, with your host, John Sestina.
Good evening and welcome to Managing to be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John tonight, joined by Craig Konstantinovich and Tony Payne, both certified financial planners. Guys, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Tyler.
It's been an interesting week. Hey, Tony, how's everything going out west?
Lovely, lovely. Enjoying a wonderful day and thinking some good financial planning here.
We do have a great show planned. It's that time of year where I think people are gathering things up last minute, perhaps, for tax season.
Yes. Oh, yes. Those last-second emails are coming in, those last-second meetings with accountants, figuring out exactly what that bill's going to be. All that's coming in right now.
Right, and it's that time of year, too, where you probably have a lot of papers in front of you, and again, hopefully didn't procrastinate and you're kind of rushing to the finish line, but we're going to talk about some spring cleaning, if you will, for a good financial plan and also a successful retirement.
Mm-hmm.
We see it all the time, Craig. You know, data gathering is the foundation to the financial planning process.
It's what drives everything, and it's amazing because, again, we deal with a lot of well-educated people, but in a world where literally just one letter could change things so dramatically, all of a sudden we hear one thing, we get the data, we see another thing, and the recommendation or the plan completely changes.
Yeah.
So that is exactly what drives everything we do.
And it's you have to look at it from a comprehensive standpoint too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially this time of year with tax planning, and it's already April.
Yeah.
So this new tax law, you're already 3 months in, you're starting the fourth month now, and there's a lot to digest this year. So I think I mentioned on previous shows, I start to talk to accountants about planning for this year, and I know you have as well. And the answer we get quite often is talk to me, after this deadline coming up.
Talk to me in June.
There you go.
We can figure things out from there.
Exactly. And it's because there's a lot of moving pieces to it. But in general, data gathering is extremely valuable to financial planning and kind of decluttering your life.
Oh, it's huge.
That can be very, very helpful, kind of simplifying things. In fact, Craig, from my office, I have the bookshelf when you walk in, and at the bottom shelf, there's a wooden sign, and all it says is simplify.
Yep.
Keep things simple, right? Like, what, Tony, was it the Navy or the Air Force had the acronym KISS, keep it simple, stupid? I believe that's who it was.
A few, and that's the whole purpose. If you keep it simple, stupid, because sometimes we are. Sometimes we're busy. Sometimes things come up. So the simpler we keep it, usually the better it is.
Right, and a lot of people we work with, too, they've got so many things going on and so many moving pieces and different businesses and different investment accounts, different tax planning ideas, LLCs, all sorts of different moving pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our job is to corral all that and make sense of it all.
Oh, yeah.
And you need the data to do that. So if you're getting ready for tax season, or if you already filed your tax returns, it's always a good time to just take a list, go through the list and make sure that you've got all the things that you're supposed to have in terms of your documents. And really take a fresh look at this year as far as tax planning is concerned. We're going to talk more about that as we get into the show. But Tony, before we do that, we always like to start with some current events and some weekly updates with things going on in the world. So what are some economic updates we have here from last week?
Well, certainly we have some jobs numbers. Those came out. We talk about those a lot, but we've always said it here. It's earnings, wages that we really need to see tick up. It's great to have jobs and be near full employment, but its wages had been flat. That was a problem, is a problem. But what we saw on average in 2017 is that personal income increased about 3.1%. So that's a good sign. I mean, of course, it depends on where you're at. Location matters. Industry matters. So we'll go through a couple of those. But the idea is we are seeing finally, take-home pay for individuals going up. That's a big deal.
I love it.
It leads to all sorts of things.
Right. Relative to 2016, 2016 was what, about 2%, 2.3% increase?
Right. We're almost a full percent higher.
That's a big deal.
And it snowballs because it's taxes collected, it's sales of businesses, it's individuals saving more for their own retirement. So it's all that leveraged up is what's happening there. So when we look at it and we go through here, we say, well, what were the places or where were the places that it was the fastest? The state of Washington, state of Idaho, Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. So out west.
Out west, it seems. Yeah, what's going on with that?
Well, there's a few things, but we know increasing cost of living, too, is out west.
Sure.
That's happening. But certainly when we go to the other side, where was it the slowest? It was in places with, we'll say, mining and farming. And part of the reason was farming income went down. So that was different. Again, location matters, industry matters. So farming and mining, not as positively affected here. But if you were in some of those other areas, retail, even manufacturing and construction, those were industries that really had a strong lead. The same with healthcare, too.
And that's not just out west. That's across the board, it seems, too, no matter what, as far as the actual fields of work, right? Durable goods versus construction and so forth.
You've got it. You've got it. What do you think it was here in Ohio? Just curious. So
Washington
was the leader. Yeah, Washington was the leader at 4.8%. Personal income growth.
I have no clue, Craig. What do you, any guesses?
I was going to say, if I was a betting man, I'd say probably close to the average, but I'm staying a little bit more on the positive here, so I'm going to say slightly above average, maybe closer to that 3%.
Oh, just under 2.7.
Okay.
Our neighbors to the west in Indiana, for some reason, were a tick higher. 3% personal income growth, finally again. And yes, I keep repeating this because it's good news and it's fun to talk about. Now, I mentioned Ohio. Indiana was a little higher. For some reason, though, our neighbors to the south, Kentucky, 1.6% personal income growth.
Interesting.
So perhaps a direct result of that farming and mining being affected.
Right.
So the industries really matter.
It does for sure. And we've talked about it so many times over the years on this show, and it's about wage growth, as you said, Tony. It's not just new jobs, but wage growth within those jobs. So these are some positive factors. I think a lot of them are increasing. Are there any negatives? Any people that actually had a decrease?
Let's talk about decrease. And when you say decrease, do you mean against inflation?
Percentage change, income-wise. And I think there's only one state. I was kind of leading you on there, Tony. But I think it was North Dakota, actually, based on the 2017 numbers. Was the only state that had a drop in the personal income change. But every other state was positive. So that's a good sign. It's a good sign. And again, we're due for another jobs report soon at some point, too.
Right.
And you got to always take those with a grain of salt, good and bad, right? Because they can tend to revise those. And I'm sure the next one will have blame the snow that we've been having in the Midwest here still in April on other reasons why job numbers weren't certain ways. But we need that consistent number, the 300,000 plus number, plus wage growth within that to really see things take off as far as the economy is concerned. But we started the show, Tony, talking about getting organized, and we're coming up on a break here, but when we get back, we're going to talk more about the things you should be keeping and for how long. You know, Craig, we've got that question so many times. You know,
oh,
I've got these old
gosh.
Statements, or I've got this tax return,
yeah.
or I've got this old bill. How long do I need to keep it? More importantly, where should I keep it?
Mm-hmm.
And then the fun time would be, hey, you know what? You can shred it. Get rid of it. So we're going to go through a lot of those. There's a lot of different pieces to that. Call us at 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back. This is Tyler Cook, Craig Konstantinovich, and Tony Payne all here this evening. And we're talking about a little spring cleaning from a financial planning standpoint. Obviously, taxes is a big piece of that. And Craig, as I said before the break, we get the question all the time, you know, where do you keep these things? How long should you keep them? And a lot of moving pieces to that. But before we jump into that, we have our second workshop coming up this week?
Yeah, second workshop this week, Wednesday nights at the Hub on Kenny Road, where we, again, educate people a little bit further on exactly what financial planning is. And, you know, again, we always talk about it, you know, everyone needs to have a financial plan. Not everyone needs to have a financial planner, which is why we want to bring others together and start getting their financial plan on track here, whether young, old, or in the midst of it here. We want to make sure everyone's got that plan in place.
Now, that's part of our mission, is to create and maintain, right, fee-only financial planning as the standard within the industry.
Right.
And when John first started, geez, 54 years ago.
I know.
It's crazy. His goal back then was to create a profession called financial planning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask him today, I wish he was here tonight so we could ask him the question. You know, have you succeeded? Have you met your goal of creating that profession? He tells you no.
Yeah.
I've seen him say it many times.
Well, even he was, we were very fortunate to have him join us for that first session. And he stood up at, you know, the very front of the class and said, you know, pounding his chest and saying, I have not succeeded in my lifelong mission here. And I hopefully am doing the right things by getting the right people in place to continue that education. So that way, you know, maybe I'm, you know, years in my grave at this point, but you guys are able to get that education, that awareness out there about it. And that's what he continues to push for us. So I'm all in favor of it.
Right. And the reason why he says he failed was because if you ask somebody, hey, what's financial planning? They kind of look at you like, investing maybe?
Or, tax,
you
know, stuff. Tax,
right, right. It's still not a clear, definite answer. And that's
right.
Obviously, there's a lot of reasons behind all that. But our mission is to not only continue what John started, but make fee-only, right? Fee for service, not selling products, giving unbiased advice. Make that the standard within the industry. We've got a lot of work to do, but we're starting with things like this workshop and other educational events just to teach people. That's half the battle, and that's the whole point of this radio show.
Exactly.
So let's continue with that theme. And Tony, that, you know, that's the tax season. You've got so many things coming in the mail. You know, to get the big letters on the envelope that say important tax document. Right, keep this, don't throw it away. So, what are some important things from a tax standpoint that you can hang on to, and for how long? In fact, let's start with the things maybe you can hang on to for the shortest amount of time.
The shortest window, because really, when we talk about data, there's all kinds of great reasons to keep it. But deep down, I think most people want to be covered if the IRS ever challenges you or anything ever comes up. So it's a CYA.
Yep.
So the idea is you at least want to keep things, for the most part, tax-related documents, at least 3 years, because that's the window for audit.
And I want to be
now,
very clear about that, too. I want to be very clear. So that's the supporting documents, not the return itself.
Right.
But the documents for that tax year, right? Or those three tax years.
Great point. Yeah, exactly. The actual receipts, perhaps, in this
there
case, or the actual books for your business, the meeting notes, things like that. That's the core, not the tax return. That you might want to keep. We'll get into that a bit longer,
mm-hmm, right.
Indefinitely, perhaps.
Right.
But, and again, what I was going to say there, though, was 3 years if you're perhaps a W-2 wage earner, but if you're a self-employed person or you have your own business, you may want to keep things 6 years, because the IRS looks a little differently at some of those expenses, and they could go back and call it something different, perhaps, and they actually have up to 6 years there. So that's why if you're in business for yourself, you want to keep those supporting documents, typically at least the 6 years, and then you can wash them. The next point to this, though, is it's nice to keep things digitally, because that makes storage a lot easier. So as we're talking about the spring cleaning a little bit for your financial life, you've got to keep in mind, perhaps there's some new thinking here. Perhaps you don't have to save all those old checkbooks from 20 years ago. That's
right.
The idea.
Yeah.
Because, again, if you're outside of that 6 years and it wasn't a business, you know what? It's great that you knew what your pharmacy expenses were in 1989, but it may not be something that needs to take up your file space.
That's right.
And and of course, when we think of getting rid of these things, that may be, if you're lucky enough, the fire barrel or maybe the shredder. But either way, of course, these are documents you want to get rid of very securely. And moving on, outside of the tax documents, because that's the, really, you said it, what's the shortest window? At least 3 years for the tax stuff. And the rest, your investments perhaps, and documents relating to your house, you may want to keep those until they're sold,
right,
even a few years after, actually.
Well, yeah, you remember the horror stories, Tony, from 15 years ago when, you know, clients would sell something and there would be no cost basis, because back then the brokers, the custodian, where the money was actually held, they were not required to track the basis. And some did and some didn't. But when it came time to sell that or reallocate a portfolio, that was a headache, because that you're pulling old documents, trying to go back and find the old statement you could possibly find. And sometimes the accountants at that point have to use different measures to get it accurate, right? They've used like an average cost method. So there's a lot of moving pieces to that. But Craig?
Yeah, and I was going to say, I'm working with someone right now, and there's a particular situation where we're trying to find information on a specific stock, one, to figure out if it was even a company, and then two, to figure out what someone's basis is in it. Now, backstory, this has transferred through three different estates to get to this point it is today. And we finally found one out of the seven or eight different various stocks that is actually still available and is still, in fact, a company. It's changed several names, so it took some digging. But, you know, now we're going back and trying to figure out, well, what is a fair market value for this particular stock based on the last decedent's estate settlement?
That's very complicated.
Yeah. So you want to talk about the importance of tracking that and just keeping the records here.
Right.
I mean, they pulled out the original stock certificate from, I think it was the early 60s.
Wow.
So we've got a lot of digging that led to this, but it's it's definitely a headache of a hassle, that's for sure.
The other side, too, is you might be thinking you need all this data for an investment or holding when you really don't. Perhaps you inherited it. And the way that will typically work is you want to know what was the value on the date of death, because that may be your new basis there.
Right.
And, of course, we have to caveat here. We're not accountants. We're not attorneys. So some of this may sound like that sort of advice, but you always want to run these strategies through with those advisors for you specifically. But the idea here is, you don't have to hold on to these things forever in file cabinets.
Yeah, I had
if
one
you're
person
still owning an investment, track it.
Yeah, and Tony, to that point, I had one person say, "You guys may not give the legal advice or the tax advice that we're looking for, but you're smart enough to know what questions to ask to get the answers that we need, and that's half the battle." And I was like, "That's perfect. I'm coining that, and I'm going to carry
that."
That's
a compliment, right?
Oh yeah,
you take that as a compliment. That's half the battle for sure. And it's, again, pulling all these different moving pieces together and making sense of it. That's part of what we do every day. So, Tony, you mentioned not just the investments. What other type of records should we be hanging on to, and for how long?
Well, let's say on the house, your personal home even, not just an investment property,
mm-hmm.
but your personal home, if you make improvements, not just repairs don't really count here, but improvements, those are things you want to track because they may add to your basis, what you paid for it. And really what we're getting to is, eventually, if you want to sell and downsize and you've owned that family home for 30 or 40 years and it may have gone up significantly in value, you might be looking at a tax bill. So that's the reason for saving all of those documents of improvements, because they'll help add to your basis so that eventually you may not pay as much in taxes. That's one group of documents there.
Yeah, and then bank records, too, you know, just keeping an idea of if there was any kind of charitable checks written or, you know, any tax bills or anything like that. You got to make sure you're keeping record of those.
As soon as you said that, I thought of a story. So I was working with somebody a few years ago, and they were audited specifically audited just on the charitable contributions. And you've heard this forever from the IRS, that a canceled check is not a receipt,
mm-hmm.
right? You see that everywhere. However, the letter that was received said, "We will accept a canceled check as proof that you made these charitable contributions, so please send that." So it all worked out great. The person was able to handle that using those canceled checks that they hung on to.
Right.
They hung on to for that window.
Yep.
Another scenario, we needed a client's, I think it was 1986 or 89, I can't remember, tax return
mm-hmm.
to justify, Tony, to your point, the basis of a rental property way, you know, many moons ago. And they just sold it not too long ago. But they had to start with that number and then track all their improvements, the remodels, all those things they did to the home over the years to see what their actual basis was before they sold it. And again, that helps limit the tax bill, right? So there's a lot of aggressive taxpayers out there, you know, as far as individuals and businesses and so forth, and people that they're just not taking full advantage of the things, the tools that they have in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So so again, hanging on to this stuff is important. You never know when you might need it. We're going to get to, again, things to throw away here soon, too. That's a lot in the insurance world. We'll talk a lot about that. So, you mentioned bank records, paycheck stubs. I'll keep your W-2s.
I'll keep
those probably forever, honestly. That's one of those things like the tax return. I hang on to the actual tax return forever. But those supporting documents, Tony, that you were mentioning, you can go ahead and toss those. But you know, part of our service is we scan all that stuff in for our clients.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
We get shoeboxes. We get trash bags full of data, right?
I had someone come in with literally file-size boxes worth of documents to shred, and it was just, hey, let's get this taken care
just
of.
Get organized, right? That's half the battle. So call us with any questions, 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John Sestina tonight, joined by Tony Payne and Craig Konstantinovich, both certified financial planners. And we talk about a lot of topics on this show, guys,
mm-hmm.
wide-ranging things, and some things may be too personal to ask on air. So always feel free to go to our website, managingtobewealthy.com, and click on the button on the top right that says Take Action. That'll take you to a page where you can ask a planner. Any question you want, one of our certified financial planners will get back to you. There's also a link to our questionnaire, should you opt to complete that and reach out to inquire about our complimentary consultations to see if we're maybe a good fit for you in terms of providing financial planning services. So again, go to managingtobewealthy.com. All right, guys, let's jump back right into our topics tonight. And we're talking about spring cleaning for your financial plan, how to set yourself up for a good retirement. And let's specifically talk about that. Where can you simplify and freshen up your retirement plan? What are some things we can do?
Well, the biggest thing here is looking for what's called a Form 8606, which I don't typically quote the tax code, but this is one of the most important ones because this tracks your IRA contributions. And as people may or may not be aware, there are some people that can make deductible IRA contributions and others that cannot. And it's all based on your income that's generated.
Right. So even Bill Gates, right, can make
Bill
an
Gates
IRA
can
contribution.
Make an IRA contribution. Yes. LeBron James can make an IRA contribution.
Right.
I can make an IRA contribution. Right. I like to associate myself with those kinds of people.
I like
but,
it. Yep. Good mindset.
So we can all make those kind of contributions, but it all comes into question whether or not they're deductible. So this form, 8606, this is what tracks what's deductible and what's not deductible. And people are probably thinking, well, why the heck does that matter?
Yeah, how does that simplify things, right?
Yeah, so how does it simplify things? So there's a lot of times where you can implement a planning idea of what's called a Roth conversion, or a lot of people refer to it as a backdoor Roth.
Yep.
A lot of accountants are very weary about completing such a transaction or doing something like that, but it can be a great planning tool. And I think back to just a couple years ago where I had to literally call up an accountant and advise them, hey, I have a client that's made what I believe to be non-deductible IRA contributions. Can you please confirm that? She went through, double-checked all the numbers. Yeah, that seems to be the case. I look at the tax return for the past 3 years and I say, well, they've been making this for 4 years now and I don't see this form included here, but I don't see it as a deduction. Where are we with this, or how should we be treating it?
Mm-hmm.
They were blown away. I had no idea. I didn't include this form. I don't know, you know, what was going on or why I didn't think to include that here, but you know, whether it was the client that didn't bring it to their attention or the accountant that didn't ask the question, they hadn't been tracked.
Right. So again, great work by kind of being the investigator to figure out what was needed to be done or what should have been done, right?
Yeah.
So what would have been the issue if you hadn't caught that?
If we hadn't caught that, they would have been considered non-after-tax contributions, or they could have been deductible, which means that when we go to complete the conversion, let's say it was $20,000 that we were converting, and that was 3 years' worth of contributions with a little bit of growth. The growth is what would have been taxable in that situation if we had the tax documents to track it all along the way, or if the accountant in this situation, which they did, agreed with everything that I was saying. So that little bit of growth was the only taxable portion. If we hadn't brought that to their attention and we completed the Roth conversion, all of a sudden that $20,000 could have been considered taxable income to the client and jacked their taxes through the roof.
Yep.
Substantially. And we would have had a very upset client, and you know, we would have had to kind of, you know, spin backwards. But it's that proactive approach, or that, you know, looking at the tax return to find the details that allowed us to have that conversation and figure out exactly where we needed to go or what we needed to do.
Absolutely true. Saving the client's money. We do that quite a bit with different things, and that's part of the planning process. It's nothing fancy, right? It's staying disciplined and following the process, and that form can save clients a lot of money. And so again, tracking those contributions is very, very important. Tony, what else? What other things can we do to simplify retirement planning?
Simplify it. We need to go ahead and not overthink perhaps our retirement investments, but make that once, maybe twice a year approach of, am I in the right allocation? Maybe not funds individually or stocks, nothing like that, but even allocation. Do you have the right balance? Are you taking enough risk, or are you taking too much? So this is a great time of year for that. And in conjunction with that too, are you saving enough? So again, it's that spring cleaning time to say, okay, gee whiz, am I doing enough? And how is that part of simple? Because all you have to do is log in usually, go adjust your pay contribution or deferral contribution. Maybe you kick it up 1% or 2%. If you got a raise or an increase with cost of living, maybe you do that. And the idea is it's for savings. Make yourself simply save more for retirement. You don't have to do anything else. Log in once, adjust it, and just live on what's coming into you in your paycheck. And you've done a great thing for yourself very simply just by doing that once a year about this time. The other time thing to do this time of year double-check your Social Security statement. Usually you need to log in online to look at that, but you want to look at, are your earnings being reported accurately or not?
And this
could
be,
that way you can get ahead of things.
Yeah, and this can be huge too, not just for that purpose, but you know, especially in this day and age where we have so many, you know, hacks or identity thefts or fraud. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the easiest ways to figure out if there is anything that's going out there, especially someone trying to claim your benefits, is just trying to access your statement and see exactly, you know, how much have I accredited or accumulated, rather, as far as Social Security benefits. And like you said, Tony, are my wages being reported correctly? This was another big one that I walked through with someone because they had transitioned from being a self-employed business owner to a W-2 employee. And for whatever reason, Social Security only calculated, or for that year, only tracked their W-2 wages as far as their benefits. When in fact, they had, you know, 4 or 5 months of actual self-employment income that was missing or not calculated in that. So they were missing out on $50,000 plus of income that would have driven up their total wages for the year, which thus would have increased their Social Security benefits. So this is a very important thing to do. And again, while you have your W-2 right smack dab in front of you, just say, hey, is this fairly accurate to what I had on my W-2?
It's a matching game, right?
Yeah.
Match the numbers up.
You got that right.
So somebody who's maybe approaching retirement, so they're making that decision perhaps this year, next year.
Yeah.
They've got employer-provided, you know, maybe it's a 401k plan, 403b plan, 457 plan. We can
numbers
go on and on.
Alphabets, yep. And soups of all
so
types.
So perhaps some consolidation makes sense, simplifying things, right, with other accounts you already have. Perhaps it doesn't. You know, the answer is when you retire is not always roll over your 401k to an IRA.
Yes.
That's not always the answer. And Craig, we've seen cases where that's not the answer because there's different things that come into play.
Yeah.
For one, your age. Perhaps if you're retiring in your late 50s, it makes sense to leave your 401k with your employer.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Because for 401ks, more times than not, you can take distributions from the account or from your 401k rather between ages 55 and 59 and a half. And not pay any kind of penalties, which you would if you rolled that into an IRA.
Right, taking it before 59 and a half.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, so it's not always a blanket decision. Another thing I'm thinking of, there's scenarios we work with a lot of clients that have 403B plans,
mm-hmm.
which is very similar to a 401k. It's just a different type of business entity that's it's set up under. But there's a special rule with 403B plans, that if, for example, if you worked at the university, worked at Ohio State, right, and you're actively employed, and you're beyond that age 70 and a half,
mm-hmm.
that 403B money is not subject to required minimum distributions.
And this could be huge.
It's huge. I've seen it firsthand. I've helped people do it. And the scenario is you're leaving, you could potentially leave hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in an account and not trigger that forced distribution that the IRS says you have to take at 70 and a half years old. And what are you doing? You're saving tax money, allowing the money to continue to grow tax deferred. So a lot of moving pieces to it. So again, simplifying is, we're all about that, but it's not as easy as it may sound.
Right.
And we can help guide people through those things. And other things you look at too is, and I'm thinking of the scenario where people who are going to retire, right, and just dealing with HR departments. You've seen the good, the bad, the ugly, everything
yes.
with that. And again, the forms are not uniform. Every form is different boxes to check and so forth. So working through that is a mess, but again, a good financial planner can help guide you through that. So we're coming up on a break, guys. When we get back, we'll continue with this theme and talk more about how you can simplify and take a spring cleaning approach to your financial plan. So call with any questions, 821-9886 or 800-610-WTVN. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN. Welcome back. This is Tyler Cook sitting in for John. And over the break, we had a caller here, so let's start right with that. Jim, thanks for calling the show. What's your question?
Well, I need a little remedial help here. It's been explained to me by my financial planner a couple of times and all, but I guess I'm a little thick-headed on this one. In the past, when I've given to a charity or given to my church or something like that, we simply kept track of it, and then when we filed our taxes, we filed how much we had given, and that was it. With the required minimum distribution, we did basically the same thing. We knew what we paid in taxes on it and all, and then we submitted that amount, on our tax forms. Now with the new administration, it has to be done through the paperwork that would come through TD Ameritrade or whatever it happened to be. I'm under an impression that the only difference is the fact that it's got to come through TD Ameritrade now, but the tax results are the same. Am I am I misled? Am I misunderstanding them?
No, that's a great question, Jim. Thank you for calling so much. It's a little complicated process, but as far as tax planning is concerned, you want to keep the actual statement that shows the distribution occurring, and then the other side to close the loop there as far as tax planning is concerned for receipt purposes is have the charity send you a receipt that matches obviously the numbers that were distributed, but you likely will not get a separate form that says, okay, here's what you donated from your IRA to charity. The key is it goes directly from your IRA directly to that charity and doesn't come to you first. That way it stays off your tax return, which will lower your adjusted gross income, and that helps for a lot of different areas in terms of tax planning.
And when you say come to you, Tyler, you mean not go into your bank account. The check could be delivered to your home address, but not necessarily you take receipt of the check and then disperse the funds, correct?
Correct. Best case scenario, those would go directly to that charity.
Yes.
Yep. Does that answer your question, Jim?
That makes more sense to me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Great callers. Very educated people that listen. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And that's exactly what it is here. Now with this new tax law, there may be ways for you to freshen up. And if you're not proactively thinking about it, let's say you've already started off the year making your charitable contributions the same way you have every year, you could be missing out on a great planning opportunity, whether it's using your IRA, your required minimum distribution from your IRAs, 401ks or whatever, and not using that towards charitable giving instead of doing it with after tax dollars.
Right.
You could be missing out on a huge tax benefit there.
Right. And with the new tax law that was passed, they extended that previous provision. So it's going to continue for the foreseeable future, right? They can always change it, but that's an option, right? Giving directly from your IRA. The other key point we didn't talk about there is that satisfies your required minimum distribution.
Exactly. So you basically take whatever amount's required. You don't realize it as income, but instead give it to the charity, but it satisfies what you need to take out of the account. So it can be a home run for those that are already charitably inclined.
Absolutely. Awesome, guys. Well, let's continue with our theme tonight, which is simplifying and doing a little bit of spring cleaning. And what are some other ways people can simplify just their overall financial plan? Obviously, leading into retirement, it's a big time to get things in order from your living expenses. And Tony, we've talked about this in the past. We believe that people should kind of test drive, if you will, test drive their living expenses. You know, perhaps the year before you're going to retire, say, all right, here, I'm going to spend 100 grand. Can I actually do it? Even though you may have means to spend more,
yeah.
Can you stay disciplined to that number? So that's one thing. And again, simplifying your life around that can help. So what are some other ways people can simplify their financial lives?
I like simplifying your wallet or purse, perhaps, but going through that and getting rid of all those nonsense things that have just built up over the years. I'm thinking a lot of credit cards or store cards and even some of those, quote, benefit programs. Those are all enticements to get you
Absolutely.
To spend more in most cases. So if you're able to consolidate in retirement, perhaps have one card that you rely on, perhaps your oldest, that may be the best route to go versus having all these things send in your mail and opportunities for identity theft, too.
Right. Well, we've got another caller here. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for all the great information. I have a quick question. My father is providing a transfer of, actually, it's a gift from his retirement. He is in his 90s. It's a, distribution, but he's giving that to his children. I am taking those funds as they're presented to me in a mutual fund, and I am transferring that in kind to my son's Uniform Transfer to Minors Act accounts. What do I need to do as far as tracking any type of cost basis?
So let me just try to restate what you said there, make sure I tracked with you. So it's coming from
Sure.
your father, gifted to you, not inherited, but a gift, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And it's gifted to you. It's coming from an IRA or it's coming from like a brokerage account?
Brokerage.
Okay, so after tax money.
Mm-hmm.
So in the scenario... So
actually, no.
If it's a brokerage account, it's considered after tax money. Still, there may be tax to pay, but it's not a distribution from like an IRA, which would be pre-tax. So if it's coming from that brokerage account, the gift, in a scenario where it's a gift, and Tony, correct me on this if I'm wrong, but the gift is you would assume the same basis as your father.
You've got it.
If it's an inheritance, that's when you would get the step up in basis to where to be the value. Your basis would be the fair market value as of the date of death. But in this case, because it's a gift, you're going to have the same cost basis that your father would.
So then when you gift it from there, you would carry that cost basis over, so your son then would take over the same cost basis that you would have from the get.
The original data then is the data you'd want to save. So when your father, whoever may have bought it, if it was taxable, that's the data that the young one may need right now.
Right, and it's a little more complicated having that double gifting aspect to it, and there could be some generation skipping issues, and that's a little more complex, and definitely want to review that with a CPA on those specifics to see if there's any issues there. But generally, that's how it works.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Great question.
Yeah, and you can tell definitely when there's families that have wealth that can transfer and they're doing it before there's any kind of passing or any kind of estate settling, there's a lot of information that comes into play here, and tracking it, like we're talking about here, keeping clear, coherent records, it's going to be extremely vital for whoever will end up with the gift or with ever, or with the actual amount.
Yeah, and part of that, if you're tech savvy, is going paperless, right? Getting rid of all that junk that comes in the mail.
Exactly.
Still saving your statements and still documenting things. Because again, those institutions, you know, whether it's a brokerage house or a bank, there's a statute of limitations on how long they have to actually keep that data.
Right.
And you have to make special requests if you go beyond that typical time window, or however many years that is. It varies by different brokers or different banks. So we got just a few minutes left here, guys. What's another one on here?
Well, after getting a haircut and seeing a couple gray hairs fall out onto the cape in front of me, I hate keeping more and more passwords nowadays. So just the idea of consolidating all of those accounts, like you were saying, Tyler, the bank accounts, some of your insurance options perhaps, getting rid of the junk credit cards, those are that many less passwords and websites you have to manage.
I love it.
Many less things you either have to remember.
Simplify, simplify, simplify. Keep it simple, stupid. If you take one thing away from tonight, it's the acronym KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Well, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. You've been listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on News Radio 610 WTVN.